Iraq and Iran reportedly will start to share diplomatic ties today. The Tehran Times reports both are opening embassies in their capitals. Kuwaiti refugees in Saudi Arabia are meeting today discussing their changed homeland and how to restore it if Kuwait is liberated. The multinational force remains in the Gulf region. Army Chaplain Daniel Freitas is with the 5th MASH unit in Saudi Arabia. He says letters from home help pass the time.
I think that this is the greatest thing the American people could ever have done for the soldiers here in the Middle East. A lot of soldiers are not getting mail on a regular basis. Maybe in a month they receive one or two letters. And when I'm able to bring through to the patients that are here in the MASH a letter from home saying, please write, how you doing, what's going on in Saudi Arabia, it brightens a soldier's day with a smile. They're just in love with the letters.
British Foreign Secretary Douglas Hurd says the alliance won't wait forever for Baghdad to pull out of Kuwait peacefully. A French government plane is standing by at Larnaca Airport in Cyprus to take rebel Lebanese General Michel Aoun to France, where he has been granted political asylum. But he reportedly is not being allowed to leave Lebanon. We asked reporter Hedy Luberding in Nicosia what she knows about it.
General Aoun, who's now in the French embassy in Beirut, has been granted political asylum in France, but it's unclear whether he can leave. Their reports from Syria and Lebanon that he will be put on trial for crimes he committed. And the crimes they're looking at are criminal and robbery charges.
General Aoun surrendered his command yesterday after Syrian and Lebanese troops seized control of territory which he had controlled in Beirut. Heavy rain continued to pound New England early today, sending streams over their banks, pouring floodwaters onto the roads in parts of Connecticut, Massachusetts, and New Hampshire. Portsmouth, New Hampshire Police Sergeant Joe Crepo says the Route 1 bypass is covered.
We've had some flooding underneath the underpass areas of the city. Some of the streets have filled up with water. We've had as much as 4 feet, 4.5 feet of water. Some of these areas have been blocked off with barricades.
Tropical Storm Lily continues to swing toward the north-northeast in the Atlantic. It is about 195 miles south of Nantucket Island, Massachusetts. Lily and two other storms brought heavy rains to South Carolina as well. One official predicts the state's dams could overflow in a couple of days. A small earthquake hit the San Francisco area overnight. It measured 3.1 on the Richter scale. No damage reported. This is ABC News. Congress is taking the weekend off, but plans to resume work tomorrow on trying to come up with a deficit reduction plan. Proposed budgets making their way through the House and Senate differ dramatically. The Senate version would double gasoline taxes over the next 15 months. In the House plan, there's no change in gas taxes, but it would forego next year's annual adjustment to income tax rates and personal exemptions. That stopgap spending bill funding the government will run out Friday. For the ABC Information Network, I'm Dorothy McIntyre.
From ABC News, World News This Week. I'm John Grimes, ABC News. Listen.
Israeli security forces need to be better prepared for such situations. Need to act with greater restraint, particularly when it comes to the use of deadly force.
Will the real President of the United States please stand up? I'd like to know who he is. I can't figure out which side of anything that George Bush is on.
Space Shuttle Discovery is on the ground, kicking up a cloud of dust. Looks like a beautiful landing.
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's World News.
Our competition is what lies outside the doors of the building. Our competition is the street.
The ideal club worker is someone who really cares and identifies with the children, and it goes beyond this is a job, it's a life.
You're listening to the men and women of the Boys and Girls Club.
You know we're going to be open at 3 o'clock, and we're going to be there at 9:30. And every day the place is packed.
They know it's a warm, comfortable environment. They know they have somebody there who will listen to them.
The men and women of the Boys and Girls Club perform minor miracles every day.
Who pats Johnny in the back and at the same time tells him he's wrong? Staff member can do it. Parents sometimes would have a more difficult job.
And one of the things that we do continuously is to educate our kids against drugs.
Nobody performs any magic. There's no magic. But we do touch lives.
We could do more if we had more. Support your local Boys and Girls Club, the club that beats the streets.
The crisis in the Persian Gulf has been further complicated by an event that took place at the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, which both Muslims and Jews consider sacred.
21 Palestinians were killed, more than 100 wounded during an hour-long battle between Israeli police and Arabs who threw rocks at Jews praying at the Wailing Wall. Israelis and Palestinians disagreed sharply over what caused the violence. According to Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir,
it was a result of an organized provocation of some Arab terrorists.
The UN representative of the Palestine Liberation Organization, Zedi Tersi, puts the blame on Jewish radicals who want to build a temple on the site of the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
We believe that Israel is now beginning to implement its plan to take over the holy sanctuary of the Muslim world.
In Baghdad, ABC's Peter Collins says the violence played right into the hands of Iraq's leader.
President Saddam Hussein, through a spokesman, has made a very strong rhetorical speech in which he condemns the incident in Israel and says that you, meaning America, the United States, and Saudi Arabia, will have to pay a very heavy price for what you have done. He says that the United States and Saudi Arabia and Israel will not be forgiven for the crime that they have committed, and that the crime you have committed will bring a sea of blood that will drown you.
President Bush says Saddam was just trying to deflect attention from Iraq's invasion of Kuwait. But at the same time, Mr. Bush assailed Israel's use of live ammunition to quell the disturbance.
Israeli security forces need to be better prepared for such situations, need to act with greater restraint, particularly when it comes to the use of deadly force.
Not long after he said that, the U.S. asked the U.N. Security Council to approve a resolution condemning the excessive use of force. The PLO pressed for a tougher resolution which would have condemned the Israeli government. After days of maneuvering, ABC's Tom Osborne told us what the final resolution stipulated.
The United States voted for a unanimous United Nations resolution to condemn the violence of Israeli security forces, resulting in the deaths of at least 21 Arab civilians last Monday. U.S. Ambassador Thomas Pickering conceded to Arab demands for a UN investigation of the incident, with a report due by the end of the month.
We expect the Secretary General's mission to examine the circumstances of the October 8th incident and to report back.
For the U.S., the stakes were high. Its allies, including Britain, France, and Canada, warned that a U.S. veto could sink the U.N. coalition against Iraq.
Israel says the action by the U.N. is one-sided and deflects the attention from the Iraqi invasion. In Cairo, the second most powerful man in Egypt's government, the Speaker of the Parliament, was murdered. ABC's Gordon Robison reports that five other men died along with Rifat El-Maghoub.
The attack took place shortly before midday local time as Maghoub's car was passing a large Cairo hotel only two blocks from the American embassy. Egypt's official news agency quoted eyewitnesses saying that the assassins opened fire on Maghoub's car from two motorcycles, each carrying two men. They then fled north along the Corniche after also firing on security forces who attempted to stop them.
The attack took place not long after Egypt's interior minister had warned that terrorists had infiltrated the country to try to destabilize the government of President Hosni Mubarak, who has opposed Iraq's invasion of Kuwait. Reports of atrocities committed by Iraqi troops in Kuwait drew the attention of the Congressional Human Rights Caucus this past Wednesday, with Congressman Tom Lantos of California saying,
"We have never dealt with consummate evil run amok as clearly as we are dealing with it this morning."
For example, the incident reported by Deborah Haddy, an American married to a Kuwaiti.
There was a woman and a small girl and a man who was on the ground, had his hands cuffed behind his back. It was her husband. They raped the woman and the child. Then they shot the man in the head.
When word of the hearing and what was said reached the Iraqi ambassador to the U.S., he dismissed the testimony.
This is, excuse me to say, it's a circus. It's not a hearing. Because it depends on people who were coached to speak that way.
The State Department made its own accusations, condemning Iraq's treatment of American evacuees as they left Kuwait for the Iraqi city of Basra by bus. Spokeswoman Margaret Tutwiler says the convoy was diverted to a hotel in Kuwait City, where some of the passengers were prevented from going with the others.
The remaining passengers were forced out of the buses and into hotel rooms, which had been reserved in advance by the Iraqis. There, they were interrogated and harassed by Iraqi security forces for 3 hours at this hotel.
Once back on board, Tutwiler says the convoy was forced to make another unscheduled stop.
Some evacuees told us that they were threatened with weapons. The convoy was delayed without food and water for another 3 hours.
The evacuees eventually got to Baghdad, where they boarded a plane for the U.S. It's not been a good week for the U.S. military on station in Operation Desert Shield. 2 crewmen were killed when their F-111 fighter bomber crashed. Another 2 died when their reconnaissance plane went down. And 8 others were missing and presumed dead in the crash of 2 helicopters. Marine Captain William Hurley was aboard one of those choppers. At her home in Chicago, Hurley's mother recalls his telling her,
Don't worry until the 2 Marines come up to the door. And they came over to where I work.
At the Pentagon, spokesman Pete Williams says,
beyond those aircraft accidents involving deaths, there's been a total of 20 aircraft mishaps during Operation Desert Shield, 15 of them involving helicopters, 5 involving fixed-wing airplanes.
To make life in the field a little easier, AT&T had been providing free phone calls for the troops. But when they dialed O this week, the voice said,
Okay, sir, the free call promotion from Saudi Arabia is no longer in effect.
The reason? The promotion jammed the circuits from Saudi Arabia, and the Saudis couldn't conduct business with the United States. So now servicemen and women will have to pay $17 for a 10-minute call to the States. Cheap at twice the price, says this GI who left a wife back home.
3 minutes would be worth it. Say I love you to her, because I haven't talked to her since I left. We've been here almost 2 months.
Phone calls aside, there's something new in the air in Saudi Arabia, or at least on the air.
Good morning, Saudi Arabia. Navy Chief Journalist Rich Janku kicking off Desert Shield Network, FM. 107.
The new radio station takes requests from the troops, offers hints, such as how to guard against scorpions, and has one unvarying weather forecast, hot. After a month on duty, a 63-year-old grandmother from the Chicago suburb of Hillside is coming home. While there, Lorraine Carillas, fellow members of her Air Force Reserve unit, called her Grambo, a nickname bestowed upon her by her grandson.
When I thought of it, someone said that Grandma Rambo or something like that, and so I said Grambo.
Master Sergeant Grambo worked with personnel records, but also trained with an M16 rifle and chemical protection gear. Some other people with relatives in the Gulf have formed a group to urge President Bush to pledge that he will not order the U.S. military to strike first. Alex Molnar, who has a son in the Marines, heads the group.
People who are uncomfortable with what's happening, people who are staggered by the prospect of the kind of bloodshed that we're facing, do have a voice. Their voices can be heard. This should be a campaign issue right now.
Molnar's group is getting support from some religious organizations. The Reverend Joan Campbell heads the U.S. office of the World Council of Churches and would like to see the United Nations take charge, suggesting,
take steps for the holding of an international peace conference on the Middle East, with a broader framework for a peaceful settlement of all outstanding issues.
The position adopted by various Christian groups represents a change from the support they voiced for U.S. policy at the time of the Iraqi invasion and breaks with a position held by their Jewish counterparts. A Christian leader in Lebanon, General Michel Aoun, has surrendered in the midst of a withering attack by Syrian forces. ABC's Peter Allen Frost has details.
For 2 years, General Aoun had vowed to fight until all Syrians left Lebanon, refusing to vacate the presidential palace to Michel Harawi, elected president 2 years ago. Aoun and Harawi, both Christians, disagree on the role of Syrians in Lebanon. Aoun called Harawi a Syrian puppet. The latest developments make Syrian control over Lebanon almost absolute, either controlling with Syrian troops or the Lebanese army under President Harawi. Peter Allen Frost, ABC News, Jerusalem.
France has granted Aoun political asylum. The effects of the crisis in the Gulf are being felt more and more at gasoline pumps and in oil furnaces in this country. Just how much more was evident in the jump of 1.6% in September's producer prices. The chief economist for the Boston Corporation, Alan Sinai, says there will be a ripple effect for months to come.
What it means for the consumer is we're going to see not only in energy and oil, that kind of thing, extremely large increases in prices, but lots of other items that we buy are going to show big price increases as well.
For his part, the Saudi foreign minister, Prince Saud, says,
"We're astounded in Saudi Arabia because of the increase of prices. We have tried our hardest to make up any shortfall in the production from Kuwaiti and Iraqi shortfall. We have made up in the OPEC this shortfall."
And the prince says Saudi Arabia expects to be producing 8 million barrels of oil a day by year's end, which would be almost 3 million barrels a day more than it was turning out before the Iraqi invasion. Sales at department stores, one of the best gauges of consumer sentiment, fell almost 1% last month. That's seen by some economists as a sign the Persian Gulf crisis and the general lackluster performance by the nation's economy continue to shake consumer confidence. Last week's long holiday weekend made for some bleary eyes and weary sighs on Capitol Hill.
In 1990, here we are. I don't think we've come very far. We scream and moan and boo and hiss, and we don't have time to take a break.
Massachusetts Congressman Silvio Cotti pretty much summed up the feeling as Congress passed an emergency spending bill to keep the government running and put together another blueprint to close the federal budget deficit. What confused the members of both parties was President Bush. He had been unwilling to accept higher income taxes on the wealthy in return for lower capital gains taxes. But at a news conference on Tuesday morning, Mr. Bush seemed to give in a little.
That's on the table. That's been talked about. And if it's proper, if it can be worked in the proper balance between the capital gain rate and the income tax changes, fine.
Tuesday afternoon, after meeting with Republican senators, it was announced that the president agreed with them that tax rates on the wealthy should not be increased at any price. By Wednesday morning, the White House was saying that Mr. Bush had no public position on the issue and that he was content to leave the matter for Congress to decide. Representatives such as Ohio Democrat Douglas Applegate were puzzled.
Will the real president of the United States please stand up? I'd like to know who he is. I can't figure out which side of anything that George Bush is on.
The president sought to explain his position Thursday after meeting with GOP members of the House committee that writes tax laws.
2 days ago, I said there was certain flexibility, and that's what it is. And my view is that it's not going to happen, and we ought to try to move forward another approach.
Meantime, members of both parties cranked out their own budget plans, but as Ohio Democrat James Traficant put it,
there are a number of tax plans here in Washington, both Democrat and Republican, and they all stink. The American people know it, they can smell it, and they are fed up.
Fed up enough to react negatively at the November elections? ABC's political director Hal Bruno doesn't think so.
The ABC News latest poll shows that people are very angry and disgusted with the situation. They blame the president, Congress, the Democrats, and Republicans equally, and they don't like the proposed solutions. But there's no signs of an uprising against their own congressperson or their own senator.
The deadline for coming up with a budget plan that is acceptable to the Congress and the administration is October 19th. And there are doubts that the deadline can be met. The Supreme Court, once again, has 9 members.
I, David McAfee, do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution.
And after taking his oath of office on Monday, Mr. Justice Souter pledged to uphold it.
I will try to preserve it. I will try to transmit it, I hope refreshed, to another generation of the American Republic, which is the inheritance of us all.
Arguments in one of the more important sex discrimination cases were heard by the full court during the week. At issue is whether employers can legally exclude all fertile women from jobs involving exposure to substances likely to hurt a developing fetus. An attorney for the Legal Defense Fund, Allison Weatherfield, opposes the idea.
This policy policy keeps being called a fetal protection policy, but I think people need to realize that that is a misnomer. What this policy does is exclude all women of childbearing age. So that means all women basically between the ages of 15 and 55, unless they can prove that they're infertile.
The case stems from the policy of a company that makes batteries, Johnson Controls, whose lawyer Stanley Jaspin says,
"The manufacturer today is responsible for the hazards it creates." That's what the company is doing here, taking responsibility for its hazards.
Three of the justices, Stevens, Scalia, and O'Connor, voiced some doubts about the wisdom or legality of the policy during the hour-long arguments. Obscenity is a case that has reached the Supreme Court in the past and is likely to reach it in the future. The House grappled with the issue during the week. It overwhelmingly beat back conservative demands for strict new anti-obscenity curbs on the National Endowment for the Arts. Leading the fight to extend the life of the NEA for another 3 years was Montana Democrat Pat Williams, who reminded his colleagues of all the non-controversial projects the NEA supported.
The NEA funded the Vietnam War. The NEA funded Driving Miss Daisy, the Pulitzer Prize-winning film, which so many of you have enjoyed as a film. The NEA funded Chorus Line. The NEH funded the Civil War documentary.
The bill does substantially overhaul the way the NEA distributes grants and lets the courts decide whether or not federally subsidized art projects are obscene. A similar bill is awaiting action in the Senate. Acting on the bill Congress passed 2 years ago, the government has started compensating Japanese Americans who were held in detention camps during World War II. The first checks for $20,000 were presented to each of 9 elderly people, including Mary Sakamoto.
I am proud as an American, proud that my faith in this country and this Constitution never failed. And so this is a moment of triumph for our constitutional democratic system of government.
Henry Takeda also received a check.
This gesture will lessen the pain, perhaps heal the wounds, but the scars will remain. And I, for one, cannot forgive and cannot forget what took place 48 years ago.
The bill Congress passed in 1988 apologized for the internment of the Japanese Americans, saying it was motivated largely by racial prejudice, wartime hysteria, and a failure of political leadership. A broadcaster who covered World War II and many other events during his 48-year career with CBS has died. Douglas Edwards was known to millions, first on radio, then on TV, when he anchored the forerunner of today's CBS Evening News. Edwards retired in 1988 and bid his audience farewell with these words.
To you and the audience, thanks for honoring me with your presence. I shall miss this contact, this opportunity each night, each day to shed light. But it is time to get on with the next leg of the journey round the bend. Godspeed. The World Tonight, Friday, April 1st. Douglas Edwards, CBS News.
Edwards was 73. He died at his home in Sarasota, Florida, after a 2-year fight against cancer. The first of the Nobel Prizes have been awarded, and the one for medicine goes to 2 Americans for their work with organ transplants. Dr. Joseph Murray headed the team that performed the first kidney transplant in America.
It's extremely gratifying. It's something I never expected. But it just means that the work was worthwhile, I guess.
The other winner is Dr. Donald Thomas, who pioneered bone marrow transplants.
I think the exciting thing in the last 15 or 20 years is that it has become reasonably successful, and a number of patients with otherwise fatal illnesses have been benefited.
The work by Drs. Murray and Thomas saved the lives of tens of thousands of people. The other major Nobel Prize awarded this week was for literature. It went to the Mexican author Octavio Paz, who was honored for his lyrical poetry and essays on Mexican society. Success for NASA this past week as the shuttle Discovery and its crew of 5 ended its 4-day mission. ABC's Jane Platt was on hand at Edwards Air Force Base in California and talked with correspondent Bob Schmidt at the anchor desk in New York as the shuttle touched down.
On the ground, kicking up a cloud of dust, looked like a beautiful landing. It is back on Earth, and no doubt the NASA scientists are uncorking the champagne. A successful mission.
This was the 36th mission of the space shuttle program. The nose wheel is down.
Discovery rolling out on Edwards runway 22.
And Discovery is back home. Those brakes are being applied by Commander Dick Richards. The shuttle is slowly rolling to a halt as the sun comes up over the California desert.
Discovery's main chore was to launch the Ulysses probe of the sun. Singing and shouting when World News This Week continues.
What's in the box, Mommy? Something good for me?
Sorry, David, not this time. This is a box of old eyeglasses our family collected to send to Christian Blind Mission International.
Oh, glasses, what for?
Christian Blind Mission International fixes these glasses up and gives them to people in poor countries.
Why, Mommy? Why don't they just buy new ones?
Well, because in places like Africa, poor people don't have enough money. So they're very happy when Christian Blind Mission International gives them glasses like these.
That's a good box, Mommy.
Last year, Christian Blind Mission International distributed 144,000 pairs of used eyeglasses to grateful recipients. To learn how you can help by sending in your used glasses, phone Christian Blind Mission International at 1-800-YES-CBMI. That's 1-800-YES-CBMI.
The song Drinking Champagne seems appropriate.
I'm drinking champagne, feeling no pain.
The song's by George Strait, and it had special meaning for him as he won the Country Music Association's Entertainer of the Year Award for the second straight time.
Thank you very much. I'm truly speechless. I really don't have a speech.
No speeches, but a lot of cheering in Cincinnati Friday night as the Reds clinched the National League Championship Series over Pittsburgh and got ready to host the American League winner in the World Series this coming week. The Reds will play Oakland, which swept Boston in the ALCS. And those are the people and stories that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Gil Lungen. Engineering by Joanne Brancali. I'm John Grimes, ABC News, New York. World News This Week is a presentation of ABC News.